Part 1. Le Pont des Arts. Chapter 1. Paris, France, October 2006. The shrill noise of a garbage truck banging trash bins on the sidewalk outside her window woke Salou early. Still exhausted, she stretched and flung off the covers. 2 years out of the Paris School of Medicine, she had been working long shifts in Necker Hospital's neonatology unit. As she prepared for work, she thought about calling her parents. She hadn't spoken to them for days, but she decided against it and resolved to do so after work. For now, she needed to focus. It was going to be a busy day. Salou stood in front of the mirror only long enough to throw her black hair into a loose ponytail, which accentuated her slender neck and fine features, distinctive of her native Fulani tribe. Then she slung her backpack on her shoulder and dashed out the door to catch the next metro. She wove her way through the rush of pedestrians, most with coats zipped up to their ears to protect against the cool morning breeze. Digging her gloves deeper into her coat, she stepped up her pace. At the corner, waiting for the walk signal, she smiled briefly at the thought of soon enjoying the warmth of the brand new office she'd moved into after her promotion to lead the ICU. The signal turned white, and Salou stepped onto the pavement. She didn't see the silver-gray sedan bear down on her at full speed. The sudden impact launched her into the air, knocking her bag loose. She landed on the asphalt several yards away. The contents of her pockets went flying down the road. The unidentified vehicle raced past the crowd and vanished into the distance. In a matter of minutes, the wail of sirens drew close, and paramedics fought their way through the throng of onlookers that had clustered around the accident. In their midst lay Salou, seemingly lifeless in a pool of blood, eyes wide open, body disjointed. A few stunned bystanders appeared to be praying. The rescue squad's leader placed an oxygen mask on Salou's face and looked for a pulse. Two other paramedics then carefully lifted her inert body onto a stretcher and pushed it into the ambulance.
"I found her backpack with what appears to be the earpiece of a cell phone or portable device. I guess everything else was lost or destroyed," one of them said as the vehicle careened through the busy streets toward the American Hospital of Paris.
"Do we have a name? Someone to call?"
asked the dispatcher, radioing in from the hospital.
"Not yet. We couldn't locate a wallet."
"Unidentified female in her 20s,
the rescue squad's leader said.
"Unresponsive. Hit and run. We'll be there shortly."
The small case holding Salou's ID and apartment keys had landed in a gutter where the sidewalk met the road. It floated with a steady stream of water left behind by the street cleaner's hoses, straight into the sewers. Salou was still unconscious when the ambulance reached the hospital. She was immediately rushed to the trauma unit and placed on an operating table in the center of a cool, brightly lit room.
"Oxygen. She's sinking into coma. Gilbert, we're ready."
The anesthesiologist sedated Salou intravenously, and Dr. Garde de Sousse, a neurosurgeon, grabbed a scalpel and made a tiny curved incision in the young woman's scalp before removing a small piece of her cranium. He feared a potential aneurysm. For several hours, the team tried to stabilize their patient. There was silence in the operating room as Dr. Garde de Sousse drained excess fluid from Salou's head to relieve the pressure on her brain. The anesthesiologist's eyes remained fixed on the monitors displaying her vital signs.
"We're losing her. Pulse negative.
Cardiac arrest,"
shouted the surgeon. The electroshock produced a convulsion on Salou's chest. Precious seconds ticked by as the surgical staff surveyed her response.
"She's back."
"Excellent. Let's get it done."
A large band of sweat beaded the surgeon's forehead as he finished draining the fluid from Salou's skull. Using a small metal plate, sutures, and wires, he carefully secured the excised piece back into place. Dr. Alexander Garde de Seuss left the operating room looking drained. He was buried in his thoughts when a familiar voice startled him.
Hey, Dad. Are you okay?
Alexander looked up and met Benjamin's eyes. The young physician was a cerebrovascular neurosurgeon in his last year of residency.
I'm concerned that one of my patients might not be able to function normally again. If she makes it, that is. Hit and run.
Alexander shook his head.
Fractured neck, internal bleeding, and cranial trauma. We had to drain excess fluid from her brain. This sounds pretty serious,
Benjamin said with a frown.
I'm planning to assign her to you. Can you check on her now? She's in recovery. Of course. What's her name? We're not sure. The paramedics found her backpack, but we don't have an ID yet. I have requested that her case be referred to the authorities.
The young woman lay wrapped in a heated blanket as nurses struggled to bring her body temperature back to normal. Her left arm was encased in a cast, her neck held in a stiff cervical collar, and she breathed softly through a ventilator steadily humming in the background. As Benjamin stepped into the room, he was barely able to catch a glimpse of the immobile form on the bed as she was surrounded by an army of caregivers busy checking her vitals and ensuring her environment was safe and comfortable. The nurses finally completed their duties and left the room. Benjamin approached his patient cautiously. Though her skull was buried beneath a cloud of bandages, he couldn't take his eyes off her. Trying to shake off the unusual feeling invading him, he washed his hands, put on his gloves, and checked that the hollow plate his father had inserted into her skull was holding steady.
So, how's she doing? Any improvement?
Benjamin looked back over his shoulder as Alexander entered the room. The resident physician was slightly taller than his father and had inherited his brown hair, chiseled jawline, and deep blue eyes.
The swelling is stabilized. It's even started to recede. That's encouraging. Keep checking on her every couple of hours or so. I'm going home. We'll catch up later, Ben. It's a good thing you're getting some rest, Dad. I'll stick around for a while.
It took Alexander about 30 minutes in the late afternoon traffic to reach his house, a magnificent 16th century style residence located in Neuilly-sur-Seine, an upscale neighborhood in the western suburbs of Paris. The ochre-colored mansion stood in the middle of exotic oleander, lavender, olive, and cypress trees. Its iron gates, shaded stone terrace, and Mediterranean tones gave it the distinctive look of an Italian villa. As he pulled up, he could see his wife, Cecilia, watering the flowers lining the front patio. She looked up as he got out of the car.
You look worn out.
Hard day,
he said, and then related the day's events.
That's so sad,
she replied when he'd finished.
Do you think she'll make it?
I'm not sure, Sal. She may come out of her coma in a few days, or it could be weeks. It's difficult to predict. Ben's taking care of her now. He'll page me if there's any news. How was your day, sweetheart?
Cecilia's answer was drowned out by the squeal of a young girl whose head popped out the front door.
Puppy! My day was fun!
The giggling 6-year-old redhead leaped joyfully into her grandfather's arms, and Alexander burst into laughter as he caught her.
I'm glad to hear it, Isabel,
he said, carrying her into the house.
Now, let's see how it all went for Grandma.
Cecilia had already retreated inside the home and was speaking to Claire, the sitter who'd been helping Benjamin care for his daughter.
Isabel, Cecilia called. Bath time.
Benjamin monitored Salou's progress regularly throughout the early evening. Her status remained unchanged as she breathed to the respirator's constant beat. Before leaving for the night, he checked on her one last time. He noticed delicate fingers sticking out of her cast and picture them running across the keys or strings of some fine instrument.
I took her arms out from under the blanket, just for a moment,
one of the nurses said, catching his stare.
I hope you don't mind.
Startled out of his thoughts, he blurted.
That's perfectly fine. I'm going home. I'll see you all in the morning.
Benjamin headed straight to his parents' house to pick up his daughter, who was already half asleep, then made the trip home to his apartment in the 17th arrondissement, across from Port Mallow and the Champs-Élysées. He'd moved there with Isabel 1 year after Sarah had passed. After tucking his daughter in, he collapsed on his bed, but he couldn't find sleep right away. Images of the young woman clinging to life in her hospital bed kept looping in his head.